Tiger Nation. I am Byron Hulsey, headmaster at Woodbury Forest School, and I would like to welcome you to the Woodbury podcast series. This podcast consists of informal yet substantive conversations with alumni, faculty, staff, and students. The conversations explore how Woodbury's core values empowered alumni to build a solid foundation for their lives, how those core values are taught today by Woodbury teachers, and how those values are put into practice by today's students. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you enjoy. Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Woodbury podcast. We're lucky today to be joined by Sean Harvey. Sean Harvey is the founder of the Warrior Compassion Institute. For a number of years now, he's been engaged in working with men. I'm eager for folks to get to know Sean. He's been on the Woodbury campus twice. Before Christmas, he was on campus and visited with a number of boys. And then earlier this week, this is our first week back from the Christmas holiday, Sean visited with the full Woodbury faculty for an hour's long workshop. So welcome, Sean. Glad that you're here. Looking forward to the conversation. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Byron, and thank you for having me. I'm excited to just jump in and see where the conversation takes us.
Sean, why don't you just start by telling us a little bit about you? We know, where'd you grow up? What have you done? What led you to the work that you're doing now?
I'm from Southwest Ohio. Left when I was 17. I moved to Chicago and then moved to New York City. I was there for about 19 years. This work, the work with men, really started. I had become a consultant on Wall Street doing organization development work. And it was on my 40th birthday that I was tired of creating miracles in 2-hour increments. On my 40th birthday, I decided to leave that consulting role. I was overseeing a consulting division of about 150 consultants worldwide. For my birthday present, I resigned. And then within 2 weeks, an opportunity came along at Eileen Fisher, the women's fashion company. Interesting that a lot of my men's work started because I went to work for a women's fashion company. When I went there, two significant things happened. One, I went on an 8-month interview, and on my first day after the interview and on my first day on the job, my two bosses sat me down and said, you know, Sean, you have proven yourself in the interview process. We now want you to stop proving yourself and learn how to be who you actually are. When you interviewed with us, you showed us your heart and you showed us your polish. We hired you for your heart, and we want to see less of your polish. You know, we want to see you unfiltered. And that was, one, a bit of a shock, but then two, it was permission to go on this journey of my own personal transformation journey in the company. Two, I started noticing that men were being transformed in this culture. I mean, it was a company that was 83% women, but the men were saying the culture was having this impact on them in very subtle, unconscious ways. And they would say things like, you know, my wife said, I'm more patient. I listen differently. I don't need to be right all the time, and I'm more curious. I'm more emotionally expressive, and I'm more creative in solving problems differently. But what every man said that I talked to in the company, they felt more comfortable in their own skin. And it was in that where I was like, you know, we need to bottle this up and take it out in the world. 7 years ago, I left the organization and started doing this work with men.
Why exactly were you so motivated to work with men? What's going on with men that you can work, you can address, you can engage? What's happening?
I think the most obvious is just as we talk about the epidemic of loneliness and isolation.
Yeah.
And what I often say is the suffering and silence that we do and that we don't share with others. And in the work that I do with men, I often say some of the most powerful work is when men realize they're not alone. And more importantly, they're not the only one. So whatever crazy we might be having in our heads, if we go to a group of guys, we realize we're not the only one thinking this or asking these questions or just have things top of mind that we just don't often have the space to talk about. Just seeing the power of one, you know, I ultimately became the head of personal transformation for the company, and seeing men come into a personal transformation experience and more often than not going, I didn't really know what this was, but I was curious. But they would say, but I'm learning about things about myself I didn't know was possible. I didn't know I could learn this about myself. And the doors of that opened as I started to look at maybe some of their ideas, maybe some of their outdated ideas, maybe some of the ways they've been wounded, maybe some of the opportunities to heal and to come into a more authentic view of themselves. So for one, I was seeing firsthand the power of this work. And then as I've gone out into the world, seeing how many men are yearning for this work or would desire this work, but don't really have the openings or outlets to know how to engage in the work of the inner work into being in their fullest expression in life.
This is going to be terribly simplistic and a massive generalization, but it strikes me that qualities and traits that we would typically in our culture describe as masculine might over time kind of feed this loneliness and this isolation and this separation. Qualities that we might typically associate with being feminine work to break some of those barriers down and allow us to be more open and vulnerable and willing to engage. Perhaps you gained that experience firsthand working for Eileen Fisher. You have some interest in bringing some of that possibility to the men you work with in your current role. Is that fair or accurate or not?
That is fair. You know, for me, it's looking at, I often think in these juxtapositions of, you know, when I started this work, when I was at Eileen Fisher, I called it the Compassionate Masculinity Project. Today, the work is the Warrior Compassion Focus. And so really balancing both strength with heart, the access to our emotionality and our masculinity. And it's not an either or, but it's like, what happens? How do we strengthen as men when we have more access to more parts of ourselves and the parts that we've let go, or as friends of mine would say, we voted off the island, when we can reclaim. Yeah. And it's, and I do see, like, when we have more access to compassion, to self-love, to a sense of our open-heartedness, and really the open-heartedness for ourselves. And so you're looking at the parts, those things where we might feel shame, we might feel fear, we might feel like we can't talk about or share certain things, when we can start to have compassion for ourselves and those aspects and the ways we might be constricted and be able to open up, that I think becomes the opening that we become more balanced in both our masculine, if you want to use masculine, feminine, but really yeah. Our emotionality, our spiritual depth, and our ability to hold the roles of masculinity and navigate. So we're not losing it as we're in this period in time where a lot of the notions around what it means to be a man and masculinity are being, you know, challenged or explored or deconstructed. Mm-hmm. What does it mean to still hold the true authenticity? And the tenets I always use in this work is how to help men be more authentic, to hold a sense of purpose, and to have connection that's steeped in love.
What are the social effects or the effects on the broader society for the loneliness and isolation and alienation of men who don't feel connected to themselves or to others? What are some of the things that we're seeing in the wider society?
Well, I think we're seeing a divide, you know, a greater divides across gender between men and women in particular.
Yeah.
In terms of how men and women are relating, and then can get into conversations beyond the binary or with trans folks. But I think even within men and women, it's the senses more of the isolation, stoicism, disconnection is creating more challenge between gender dynamics. I think then when you look at leadership, it impacts, you know, what are the quality of your team dynamics on your team, the approachability yeah. you have to your direct reports that they can relate, and also more access to your creativity as you vision for navigating the culture. And then if we go even further, then in society, we're seeing men who are disengaged, men who are isolated, men who hold on to grievance, that can become a breeding ground for more extremist ideology and the radicalization of men and young men.
And have you had some experience working with that?
I have actually. I teach a course at American University called Men, Masculinity, and Extremism, looking at the psychological drivers and cultural influences on radicalization of American men. And within that, I have just met in a lot of my work, working in organizations like with police, military, defense. Not that I'm looking for it, but these may be arenas where you may see more men who are on the path to radicalization. And I have met more extremists.
Why is that?
Who is drawn to these fields? What, how might they be predisposed? What is the you know, posture of stoicism versus emotional expression, living in maybe some of the archetypes of traditional masculinity. And then you look at, so what is drawn to someone who also seeking more rigidity or rigorous definition of role? And so we've seen this sort of combination. And I've found that the pursuit of law and order can be a space where more folks, not necessarily even, you know, as we even look at with veterans, how bad actors are trying to get to veterans after they leave the military and recruit them to more extremist ideological groups. You know, we're sort of in this period of time where, to me, it's not that I'm looking to work with counter-extremism efforts in particular, but knowing that in the systems that I go into, that is there, and how to identify men who might be disengaging, men who might be radicalizing, and what are the openings for prevention, and what are the openings for supporting these men to come back into their truest selves and back into their hearts.
What are some of the most obvious warning signs for a man who may be falling prey to these pressures or these inclinations?
Isolating. Are you noticing that they're disengaging from life? Two, when you listen to them, are you hearing them talk about grievance, and are they able to get beyond the grievance? Are they talking from a place of black and white thinking that's either all or nothing in either proposition? What might be some deep-seated anger that's coming through as they talk about the other? It might be dehumanizing the other. There's often a sense of a combination, and when we talk at the Eradicate Hate Summit, that misogyny and anti-Semitism are often part of the equation for extremism. And so the, you know, what might be in play as men are talking about their grievance and just listening to and attuning into where they are, where, how they're disconnecting, and where they may be pushing some of their anger.
What have you found are some of the most effective techniques to help men essentially rediscover their truer selves?
This is going to sound maybe odd. In my book, when I talk about the preparation for healing, the first step that I say is creating communities of men safe enough for men, for other men to ugly cry in front of each other and be held. So are we creating
to hug, cry, and be held in front of each other?
Right. And not that that's what you have to do, but are you creating containers that are that safe to be, for men to be courageous, to be vulnerable? The second is to see the world with childlike wonder and to rediscover play, creativity, and to be able to express ourselves. Often I see play, creativity as the doorways into the inner life. Mm-hmm. And so often what we can't access from our logical minds, we may be able to actually get to from the art that we draw, the poetry that we write, the words that we use, the ways we dance, some of the shoulds, and to allow yourself to be silly, and then surrendering into the unknown. And so the letting go of control, that's often where I bring in whitewater rafting and the metaphor of the river. Who's in control, the river or you? And then to learn to listen to the voice within, you know, to get quiet, to get still, get into contemplative practice, to get into somatic practice. And then when I went to some de-radicalization training, some of what we also tapped into was how to use some of these modalities as a way to understand your own story. And so when I'm working with someone, I get really curious about their story, and I get curious about their views. And I also separate between the humanity of the man and the views of the man. So where do those views come from? What are they about? What might be valid, and also what can be challenged? And to your question, simply, you know, sometimes we want to overprocess and overpackage all this. And the reality is, just by bringing men together, creating that container and allowing them to have real and honest conversations, and by modeling for each other and inviting each other into deeper vulnerability, that can often open the door that, again, I'm not alone and I'm not the only one. So
yeah, I'm reminded of the Swiss psychologist Carl Jung, who said that one of the tasks of life is to rediscover who you were before the world told you what to be. And for a lot of us, you know, remembering, in my case, remembering who I was when I was a boy, and some of those experiences. Maybe that's one of the reasons why I like being in a boys' school. It keeps me keeps me younger than I would otherwise be. Well, tell us a little bit about your observations of Woodbury. You've been to school twice. What have you seen that's piqued your interest? What challenges would you identify for us to wade into as we seek to know, challenge, and love the boys in our care, and at the same time challenge them to work hard to build their character and take care of each other?
I think first, you have a very special place. The young men that I met were deeply passionate. Their questions that they asked were deep, personal, provocative, and they weren't afraid to ask the hard questions. My guess is if we were to expand it out, a student body that, when given the opportunity, would be open to some of the deeper conversations around what does it mean to be a man? What are you navigating and who do you want to be as a man? And then meeting with the faculty, the opportunity to have the space to explore this. And I think, as I was sharing with you all, the space for each instructor, as you play the roles of instructor, coach, and advisor, the role you have and the opportunity you have to be a role model. And so then from that place of being a role model, what is your commitment to your ongoing inner work? As the way, and often the way I see it is, we can do our inner work today, and if we do our inner work in 2 years, the world can be, as in the rate that we're operating now, a very different place. And asking the questions, who am I in the world today, not who am I from the world of 2 years ago? And so to continue ask and challenge yourself, how am I navigating with the shifting expectations of men, the shifting rules and roles around gender, and the shifting landscape in the world? And how am I showing up so I am my fullest version of myself? And then sharing the, as we talked about, the elephants in the room. What are the things we don't talk about? What are the things that we don't think we need to talk about that actually could create some real opportunities for powerful discussions amongst faculty of mixed gender, and then also amongst faculty and students. And then to have
Yeah.
students having their own conversations that are just being prompted to go deeper and to look at themselves and look at their role in the world and how the models that we've been given around masculinity and what it means to be a man, to also be open to challenging that, to say what works, what doesn't, what have I learned and what am I evolving into?
We have a couple of advantages here at Woodbury that it would be negligent to not explore. One of the advantages is that we're all boys. And because we're all boys, I think that gives boys permission to be who they really are rather than being inclined to kind of show off for a girl who is not right here in our midst. So that's an advantage, being all boys in that regard. Secondly, the all-boarding piece. We're here 24/7. Our boys have a great chance to get to know each other and themselves better than they otherwise would if we were a day community. So those are two very important advantages there. One of the challenges that I'm seeing that I'd be interested if you have any reaction to, a lot of the work that you're talking about is soulful and it's long-term, it's ongoing, and it's just deeply challenging. In the current environment, it seems like so much of our world is dominated by, 15-second videos curated on TikTok. And that kind of simplistic view of the world in 15-second segments of video clickbait is at odds with some of the more, again, soulful, reflective, resonant, courageous work that it's required for a boy to be who he truly is, as opposed to who he thinks the world might want him to be. So I find that to be a big challenge for any human community right now to wrestle with.
When I was living in Washington, D.C., and I started Men's Soul Adventures, D.C., and basically the premise was outdoor adventure meets deeper male bonding, meets soul connecting conversations, either philosophical, existential, or spiritual awakening discussions. On the first day, I didn't know how many guys would show up, how many guys would sign up. And we had 52 guys sign up in the first 24 hours. We had 180 guys signed up within 3 months. I went to four other cities. And we went from 180 to 330 men within 3 days. And I got smart and I said, all right, let me ask why. Why are you coming to a soul adventure? And so a third of the guys said, I wanted a different type of adventure. This sounded interesting. So to pique the interest of action activity,
Yeah.
third of the guys said, I just want deeper connection with men beyond the superficial. And a third of them said, I just want to have deeper conversations around things that matter. And I have questions around practical questions around spirituality and faith, and no place to go to really get those answers. I think in that it showed me that there is a hunger for the deeper, especially in response to the 15-second sound bites. The deeper yearning is something that goes deeper, that's more long lasting.
Yeah.
And it's that tension of, this is what I should want, and this is what I really want. This is what society tells me, and this is what I'm yearning for from deep within. The key is to create invitation and have those opportunities, that there is an invitation and permission to be able to go deeper, to explore. When you do, you find that there's a hunger. And I often say, I don't speak to the logical mind. I speak to the hunger of the heart and the soul.
That resonates with me here at Woodbury in these formative years. So I really appreciate your counsel there and your provocation there. And my sense is that in our community, has heard me say this before, that boys need this place more than they ever have, and therefore the school is more important than it's ever been. Your work pokes on that. So thank you. Sean, what questions, if any, might you have for me? I promised you at the outset that this could be two-way traffic and not just me peppering you. So maybe you have something on your mind you'd want to throw out there.
What is it for you of working in an all-boys school?
A school like Woodbury, because we're all boys, all boarding in our location, it gives permission for boys to be boys a little longer and not feel like they have to rush into their adult years headlong, heedlessly kind of tracked or grooved to be a certain way, that we have an opportunity to slow life down a little bit for the boys in our care. And a lot of that has to do with our location. We're more rural than we are urban. So it's very common to see a boy, grab his fly rod and go fish the river after class, grab his bag of golf clubs and go play nine holes on the Woodbury golf course. I think all of that helps slow a boy down in a world that really wants us to go faster and faster and faster. The truth of the matter is that we'd be better off if we went slower, 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 especially boys. Whether they're developing their character and developing the values that they want to live by. So again, being a part of that and have a chance to be part of that, that's deeply meaningful to me, especially given the fact that this is where I grew up as a kid. I feel like I was, for the first time in my life, beyond my own parents, I was known, challenged, and loved. So having the opportunity to hopefully provide those kinds of opportunities for today's boys, that seems very, that resonates deeply with me. The longer I stay, the more I see boys really grow and develop over time, not just in their years at Woodbury, but also beyond. And so to watch young men come back as graduates and alumni and hear about them beginning to, enter into their own family life and get married and contemplate having children, that's really wonderful and cool to me. So I would say to anybody that I care, to be candid, I care more about our alumni being great dads and husbands, members of their community, than I care about exactly what their GPA was in high school or where they went to college. So those things, pieces that I would emphasize.
So I often work with adult men.
Yeah.
And get, Sean, when are you going to work with the young men? I often say, I play at the edges of the impossible to discover discover new insights of how do we engage men across the continuum. But I'd be curious from your perspective, as you look at where the world is today and you look at challenges facing our society and facing men and young men, what do you see as the opportunity at Woodbury for what's needed for young men today to navigate the world they're stepping into?
For several years, this is my 12th year as headmaster. For several years, this probably would have been years 4, 5, and 6 of my tenure as a school, we watched a really cool documentary called The Mask You Live In. The documentary is about how we socialize manhood from the earliest stages of boyhood, and how we construct that kind of traditional form of masculinity and some of the costs therein. One of the costs of that social construction, an inability and an unwillingness of young men to clearly identify and articulate their emotions and their feelings. One thing that I think is important, and it's just the start of a what should be a lifelong journey, is to introduce boys to the importance of staying connected to their emotional lives. Learn how to cry together, to laugh together, to tell each other that they love each other, to be comfortable with the full range of their emotional life. I think that's pretty special. And that's not, you know, again, it's easier, more easily accomplished, in my opinion, in a school like ours that's all boys and all boarding and in this location. So it's really that intersection that motivates me. I think back to my own father. He died 5 years ago, and so I don't have him as a living confidant anymore. But I think about him often. He was a bishop in the Episcopal Church, and you know, I remember him telling me so many times, not only when I was a boy, but also as I grew into manhood, he would essentially impress upon me the importance of understanding that whatever I was feeling was okay. There was nothing wrong with what I was feeling. To be raised by a man of that kind of emotional depth and breadth, and then to have a chance to be at a place like this is very, very special to me. Yeah. Sean, what's next for you? What's next on the horizon for Sean Harvey as you continue your own work in this really interesting world you've constructed for yourself? What's next?
You know, starting to lay the groundwork for the next book that's going to be focused on dude psychology, the unspoken truths of how men think, feel, love, hurt, and heal. So I'm starting with a Substack of just putting my thoughts and musings down to be the foundation for the book. Bringing this work as I move closer to my mom as she ages to Ohio and Cincinnati in particular, and really moving it from a East Coast perspective to a Midwest and Appalachian perspective.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Wow. That'll be interesting.
We're putting together a program in Maryland for police officers called Officers as Bridge Builders. And so starting to put together the role I see that men can have, I call it the MLAB, men leading as bridge builders, and the agency we have to work across ideological difference, to work across diverse perspectives. You know, as we talk about love, you know, my first book was, you know, the subtext was how to help men learn to love in a new way. What our world needs more than anything right now is love, and men having the permission to express love freely and moving from love with conditions to unconditional love. And what can happen when we bring that into police departments and the military? And while you have a job to do, you can still do it with heart.
Well, that's really wonderful, Sean. Thank you so much for being on the Woodbury podcast.
Thank you.
We hope we stay in touch with you here in the Tiger Nation, but you've been kind to come to Woodbury already twice. Really appreciate you being on the podcast. Good luck with all your work, and let's be sure to stay in touch.
Sounds good. Thank you so much.
Thanks, everybody, for being on the Woodbury Podcast. Goodbye and have a great day.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Woodbury Podcast. We hope you found our discussion insightful and engaging. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please consider subscribing, rating, or leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform. Stay tuned for more conversations in the future. And remember, the conversation doesn't have to end here. Connect with us on Woodbury Forest School social media. Reach out with your questions or comments, and let's keep the dialogue going. Until next time, take care and go Tigers!